Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story.
Time now for the DenverFan.com front page.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
Taking a look at the top stories in Denver sports, taken from your online home for the best opinions and information on the Broncos, Nuggets, Avalanche, Rockies, and more.
What in the name of Dan Issel?
With today's DenverFan.com front page, here's Schlereth and Evans.
News team assembled!
Let's start with this Will Peterson article, how wristband gate gets spicier.
It's spicy.
So good question asked of Nathaniel Hackett was, well, you had it on during the Jacksonville game, had it on during practice. Why didn't this happen earlier in the year? And he said, quote, I mean, it's just one of those things we decided collectively as a group that it would help us. I am all for the idea, and boy, I certainly signed up for this early on, that I completely bought into that there were going to be growing pains. It was going to take time for things to gel. And yet, I sort of gave him like a three-game, four-game soft launch.
Like a preseason.
Like a preseason.
If only they had one of those.
You hots, not you. But here we are, week eight, and I'm still... I kind of bristle any time I hear, well, you know, collectively we're trying to get to this point. We're still trying to learn each other. Come on, man. That just doesn't fly with me. You did have a preseason. You had time to do all this. Why is it taking so long? I'm all for collective efforts, and let's get your feedback. Let me give you my feedback. Let's arrive at something. But why is it taking so long, and why does it seem like it's still an ongoing fluid process?
Is there any way this gives us all some new perspective on how hard it is for a football team to come together, especially offensively?
Yeah.
It's not just microwave it or, you know, order it on Uber Eats and have it show up and we're cooking. You know what I mean? It's, we have to put the hard work in and get to know each other, not just as players, as teammates, but coaches get to know the players get to know the coaches and all that kind of stuff. And look, the wristband thing, I'll say this about that as well. There's a temptation when you do have a wristband to go really all out with the complexity and wordiness. And all of a sudden we have so many plays on this thing that we're making our game plan a little too complicated. Because we don't have to condense it to what's easily communicable over the walkie-talkie. I can put all these crazy plays on here and drop some really cute things that might not work. Maybe simple is good. And so maybe the resistance to the wristband was like, let's keep it simple. You know, let's keep our playbook simple, our game plan simple, and just do the things that are in front of us and that are working. So I didn't expect these guys to make the Super Bowl this year. And I don't think it's the worst thing if they don't. Then they can reevaluate their process. They can understand where they went wrong and get on the same page a little more. And maybe Russell Wilson can humble himself and Nathaniel Hackett can grow a pair. And then together they can figure it out. But the question will be, will Nathaniel Hackett get a second year to do that?
Andrew Mason writing at DenverFan.com about yet another couple hamstring injuries cropping up for the Broncos, KJ Hamler and Andrew Beck. And if Beck, how about this stat? If Beck and Hamler do not play in Tennessee, they will become the 8th and 9th Broncos to miss games due to hamstring injuries. Okay, you are the definition of a finely tuned racehorse athlete. What's going on? Is it the way these guys are being trained? Is it Lauren Landau and the training staff that just, for some reason, is screwing things up? Or is this just unfortunate happenstance?
You know, I'd say at this point in the season, really midway point, you're not doing a lot with Lauren Landau. You're not having these, like, complex training sessions where he's able to really fine-tune your body and stuff. The lifting and the running you're doing, the weight room stuff you're doing is minimal. It's a couple times a week, and you're getting in there to get a lift and and whatever. So I think it's really about the way they're practicing and the way their body's responding to the games and practices and rest and recovery and nutrition and all that. But I had my share of hamstring problems. I had a hamstring that tore off the bone. It literally tore off the butt bone, had to be reattached surgically. I have a 3-inch scar under my right butt cheek. It's called your gluteal fold, if you didn't know that. And it's inches.
I don't think I have one.
You have a gluteal
fold. I don't.
You might not.
I'm not sure.
You just might have a gluteal flap.
Yeah. Or flob.
But the fold underneath the thing, you know, underneath the shelf there. And that happened after years of it getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And the problem with hamstrings in football as route runners, and you're seeing KJ Hamler and Andrew Beck, the guys who run, explode straight away and then, you know, try to cut on a dime and do all these really intricate route running things. It puts strain on your hamstring that is unnatural for your body. And you're always trying to push past your own barriers. You want to be a better route runner. You want to be faster. You want to be more explosive out of your breaks. So you're always pushing your body further and further and further than ergonomically it was meant to go. And so you're stretching, and all of a sudden it snaps. And so it's very temperamental. It's the type of thing that, you know, I heard you guys talking about hydration at the altitude. I think that has something to do with it. The supplements you're taking may have something to do with it. Like, for example, when I tore my hamstring, I was taking creatine a little bit every once in a while because my weight would drop as a tight end. It was hard for me to keep tight end weight on. The way I could do it was a scoop of creatine from time to time. But that creatine really dries you out. And so you have to stay extra hydrated. So you're in the altitude and I'm taking creatine and boom, my hamstring pops. And so that probably had a little bit to do with it. But I was responding to the demands of the game, which means I had to be down there with a hand in the dirt blocking these dudes. So I had to get bigger. And so you never understand the chain reaction to why a guy's hammy might be messed up or why he's pushing through it or why it gets banged up. I don't think at this point we can point at Lauren Landau in the middle of the season. I do think the fact that they don't practice full speed has something to do with it because their bodies aren't conditioned for it. They're like, slow down, speed up, slow down, speed up. What is today again? Is it slow? No, it's fast. Am I ready to go? No, I'm not. Yank. You know what I mean? So every day of practice, we had to be ready to go full speed. I think that benefited us.
Man, all I heard from all of that was you had trouble keeping your weight up.
Yeah.
So you had to eat a lot, huh?
Yeah, I had to eat a lot.
How much would you eat a day when you were playing tight end? How many calories per day?
I don't even know, man, as much as I could.
How many times a day would you eat?
Well, I would eat normal meals once I was a tight end in the season because I wasn't really very, very hungry during the season. Right. And that was my problem. Like, in the off season, I could get up there. But then during the season, like, you know, your stomach is always in knots. I mean, it's go time all the time. And so I couldn't just sit down and just eat 3-4 big meals and just, like, rub my belly. So I would actually have to go into facility on when we would weigh ourselves on Friday. And Greg Saporta, his name, we called him Crime. He was assistant strength coach. He'd be standing by the entrance to the locker room next to the scale. And he'd be like, Nate, you got to weigh in. I'd be like, hold on a second. And I would go into the training room and I would strap ankle weights on under my sweats. And then I would come back so I could make weight.
So you're sneaky. Yeah. You were committing a crime to get by crime.
I was. I got by. Well, they call him Crime Dog because he was always like a stickler for like when we were doing our strength and conditioning stuff.
He had to know you were putting weights on.
No, he didn't.
Come on.
I wasn't putting like 25-pound weights on. I was just adding an extra 5 pounds.
Now, that's trying.
I hear these stories. Stank had problems keeping his weight up in college. He said he'd have to wake up at like midnight to eat.
Oh, dude.
And let me tell you something. I think I speak for all you couch potatoes out there. All you guys, you know who you are. How awesome does it sound that you literally have to set an alarm to wake up in the middle of the night to eat?
Mm-hmm. Dude, I used to go, when I was trying to first gain the weight, to go from receiver to tight end.
How much fun.
No, it wasn't fun to have the Myoplex shake with 3 eggs cracked in it and vanilla ice cream and chocolate sauce right before bed and then wake up at, you know, 7 in the morning with your guts bubbling and
diabetes.
Cause an explosion in there, man. There's a lot of recon effort on the back of that porcelain.
Oh, man. Okay. Hey, great job done by the Avalanche last night. Before, during the game, honoring the great Peter McNabb, who passed away way too early at the age of 70. A lot of nice touches throughout the course of the evening up in the press box. Every seat had a Peter McNabb a sticker at every seat. It was really, really well done. And the Avalanche went out and responded with a really good effort. I have to admit, I was a little bit worried about this game because, you know, a lot of times you see these teams that go play overseas and then they come back and it takes them a while to kind of get their legs back, you know? But yep. Yet the Avalanche, and this is, again, something that we've seen from them early in the season. They rise to the level of the team they're playing, or they rise to the moment. And I thought, whether it was the Rangers game in New York, it was a playoff-style buzz that they elevated themselves to, matched, and won. Maybe it was going over to Finland for a couple games, you know, an international-type spotlight on them. They rose to that occasion. And I think last night, knowing that it was a special night, it was a night of honoring, celebrating, mourning Peter McNabb, who has meant so much to this fan base, to this franchise, to the players. They all speak. Matt Duchene, in town with the Nashville Predators, went on for 5 minutes before the game talking about all the times that Peter McNabb would just come up to him and ask him how he's doing. They'd start to talk hockey, and pretty soon Matt Duchene would be like, "Hey, yo, Maxie, I got to go. We got practice," you know, that kind of thing. So I thought it was really a cool night all around, and proud of the Avalanche players for the way that they responded to the moment.
They're clearly a tight-knit group that have been through a lot and know how to rise to those moments, like you said. I think that, to me, the thing that touched me the most about hearing stories about Peter McNabb is this, that he connected with the players so much in a way that most media guys never do. Like, they trusted him and saw him as a father figure.
Yeah.
And athletes are taught to fear the media, you know, not trust
even
those guys
that played the game.
To an extent, yeah. Look at all of us who play the game in this building here, right?
That's
like
true.
Once you're on the other side of it, it's like, do you really have my best interest in mind or not? You're now on the other side. Can I really trust you? And the fact that all these guys, to a man, not only just trusted him, but went to him.
Yeah.
You know, and saw him as a father figure. And I heard Adam Foote talking about back in 2001 and then that Stanley Cup team. They all looked at him that way as well and saw him as a part of the team.
Well, the one thing, and somebody connected with the Avalanche a long time ago once told me, because I had a conversation with him once about how, you know, you have somewhat of a prickly, almost adversarial relationship with a lot of the media in town that cover you guys. And this person said to me, we can tell the people who genuinely are passionate about hockey. And those are the people we love. Please come. We'll have you here as much as you want. It's the ones that would just kind of be the flybys and would pop in only when the Red Wings were in town or the playoffs. Those are the kind of, and the thing about McNabb, and it's one constant. Boy, it has just been one constant in every single interview, article, any kind of tweet, any kind of tribute remembering him has always included how authentic and passionate he was about talking hockey. And when I came here 25 years ago and got a chance to meet him and start talking, it was always that way, right up until the end. Anytime I saw him, anytime you wanted to talk hockey, man, you couldn't stop him. And it was 100% authentic. And I think as players, you're always looking for authenticity. And so when you come across somebody who really, really cares about the game that much, of course, your locker stall is always open to talk to him.
And someone who wants the best for you on and off the ice.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Who cares about you as a person.
And who knows what you're going through.
Right.
Having been a player himself.
Yeah, you said Duchene was going on and on about them just talking. Right? Yeah. Just talking. It's not about, and it's not all about hockey. It's about how are you doing? You know, how are you? Like, aside from that. And I think, as players, I remember just being in the locker room and just hearing the questions fielded to my teammates and to me. It was never about us. It was always about, you know, the latest story or the latest mess up we had or the competition or whatever it was. But it wasn't about us as human beings. And I think anyone in the media who's able to connect with players as human beings will earn their trust and be beloved in that locker room or whatever it is. So,
well said.
Yeah.
Last one at DenverFan.com. Jake Shapiro writing about an unfortunate incident for Michael Porter Jr., who had his hotel room robbed while they were staying and playing in Indianapolis the other night against the Pacers. Reports state that $8,000 in cash stolen, two bracelets worth $2,000, and a Louis Vuitton bag worth $2,000. Wow. When you traveled
Yeah.
How extravagantly did you travel?
I didn't usually travel with $8,000 of cash on me. But those guys have different type of road trips, don't they?
They're on the road long.
Yeah, it's not a one-night thing. So for us, it was one night. You know, you get in at 4 p.m. and you're out the next day right after the game, straight to the airport. So we weren't dilly-dallying in the city at all. We also had security at every floor or at every exit on every floor. And so that would prevent something like that from happening.
So you never heard anything of guys getting robbed or anything like that?
Never. I mean, we couldn't even have guests come on our floor and into our room. We couldn't even get off of our room or off of our floor after 11:15 after bed checks. If you had someone you wanted to go see, Mike, you couldn't do it. You had to get real sneaky. It had to be like Mission Impossible type of stuff. Or you'd have to grease the security guard, but oftentimes it was a real cop. And they weren't, like, open to that sort of tomfoolery.
Well, as easily as you got past crime. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't that hard to get off the...
Put on some ankle weights and I'll be good.
Nate Jackson going outside his hotel window with rubber suction cups, you know.
Hey, man. Guy's got to do what a guy's got to do.
Guy's got to do what a guy's got to do. That is what's going on at DenverFan.com, the Denver Fan front page. Check it all out. Fresh content constantly being downloaded throughout the course of the day and is always free at DenverFan.com. It is an Is It Just Me Friday, giving you a chance to get those hot takes off your chest, heading off into the weekend. It could be about anything or everything. All we care about is make it opinionated, throw some humor in there, plenty of snark, and we'll love you for it. So we'll get to some of those. I want to circle back to the whole wristband thing, and I can tell already you got some people rolling their eyes. I mean, why you make? First of all, let me tackle that part of it. The notion that we get a lot of this. You guys are just, you know, tabloid sensationalism. You know, why are you making a big deal of this type of thing? Folks, the offense has been bad this year. Really bad. Like, historically bad. Embarrassing. I don't need to... Don't put this in on us, the media, or the fan hosts, or anything like that. It was you guys out there, without any provocation, who was booing this team by the end of the first quarter of the first home game. It was you guys and gals, without provocation, that were counting down the play clock because you were so fed up and frustrated. So don't put that on us, like we are just stirring the pot. A lot of this is in reaction to how you folks started to act right off the bat. So, and by the way, I love you for it. I love the fact that fans here are so demanding and they have such a high standard, and they're so fed up with what they've watched over the last 6 years that they're mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore. So kudos to you. I love you for it. But that said, stop, you know, saying that we're making too much out of this. All you had to do was listen to Nathaniel Hackett talk yesterday about the benefits of wearing the wristband to know this is a guy who thinks it is a thing, thinks it is a big deal, and thinks it could help this offense, which has been floundering so much during the season. So rather than thinking that this is eye-rolling stuff, maybe take it seriously. I know I am.
Yeah, no, I think that...
Are you?
Not as seriously as you are. Not as seriously as you are, because...
Oh, so you're okay with the way the offense has been playing this year? You
no,
love it.
No, the wristband stuff.
This is high-quality stuff. Huh?
No, the offense is really bad, but to me...
Well, could this help?
It could, and we're fixing to find out.
Well, then it's important.
I guess what I'm saying is this. Look, offensive coaches sometimes have a tendency to take things too far, conceptually. You know, listen to Dan Orlovsky talk about football. Okay, that's the one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is the stuff he's poo-pooing. The simple stuff that works. When you're on the same page, when you understand each other as players, when you run the quick slant. If you run the slant and you do it well, and I do it well as a quarterback, it's going to be a completion, no matter what coverage they have out there. So there's an element of simplifying things that I think this wristband is not going to do for them. It's going to allow him to be cuter and put in everything he wants. Because if I don't have time in the 40 seconds to give you the 15-second play call and then have you translate that 15-second play call, and we're already up against the clock. Maybe that's a too long of a call.
But my understanding,
maybe there's too much stuff going on.
But
there.
My understanding is that this stuff is not for the full 60 minutes, 60, 70 plays that you're out there. It's for those specific moments, like, hey, we're going to go up tempo here, or we're in a 2 minute.
Oh, is that right?
I'm asking you.
No. Is that it's every single play. It's every play. Instead of giving you the play, I'm just going to tell you the number, And then you, and so in certain situations, yes, it's effective. Certain wordy play calls that we like to play, but it's, yes. And it could be effective regardless. All I'm saying is, I don't necessarily think the offensive woes for this team are a result of him not wearing a wristband. I think it's them not being on the same page. And if it helps you be on the same page, sure. But it's not just about Coach Hackett and Russell being on the same page. It's about Russell and Jerry Jeudy, Russell and Courtland Sutton, Russell and Greg Dulcich. His players, man, figure out the simple stuff first and then build on that. The simple stuff they don't even know how to do.
I'm not saying that the wristband is the reason, but what I think it speaks to a larger issue, and that is here we are midway through this season and we're still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
What we're doing. We're did still we, trying to figure out what works, what doesn't work. And it
what
just,
else did we expect it, from year
but
one,
it,
though?
But it's aggravating because of people like you, and I'm saying this as a compliment, who you were adamant throughout preseason saying this isn't the right way to do it. And it wasn't just you. It was Stoke. It was Orlando. It was Chad. It was guys saying this isn't the right way. And so, knowing all that and having heard that and at the time really believing you guys but willing to give these guys the benefit of the doubt, but now here we are after not doing anything during the preseason, nothing during the preseason games, and here we are in week 8, and you can tell these two are still trying to get on the same page. It's aggravating to me because you could have done things before that might have sped this up.
Yeah.
And this whole wristband thing is just, it's a microcosm of that. It's not the reason. It just adds to all of what we've been debating and arguing and second guessing since August.
I agree with that. It's clear that Nathaniel Hackett has come up against some things he didn't expect were going to be problems. The basic stuff, the ABCs of running a football team, he didn't really understand that you actually had to address those. You actually had to start with a foundation on day one that would avoid those pitfalls. He can never do that over again. But if he gets a second chance at this next year, I do think he'll make some amendments to his training camp plan, to his off-season program, to preseason games even. I think he'll have guys play in the preseason next year. Look at Green Bay. That's the model he brought over here. They're not looking too good either right now. They have a ton of injury issues, and they're not very good at football right now. So the NFL's always changing. How are you going to change with it, Coach? And I think he is changing as the season's gone on. Do you think they've improved over the last 9 games?
And you know what? I want to get into this because, and we're up against it, so I wanted to be able to devote more time, so we'll do this coming up. But for all of the finger-pointing, for all the eye-rolling, for all the second-guessing, for all the heat that's been thrown at the Broncos and Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett for this whole wristband thing, I think there is one undeniable positive that comes out of all of this. Tell you what that is. See what you 8 a.m. texters have in store for us for Is It Just Me Friday. Nate Jackson in for Stink next.
You're going to need a bigger boat. It's time for Schlereth and Evans' big story of the day.
Why? It's just that you're so big.
Here's Schlereth and Evans with this morning's biggest story in Denver sports.
Big mistake. Big. Huge.
Nate Jackson in for Stink. Stink had to leave early. He's in Pittsburgh calling Steelers-Saints this weekend for Fox. So he had to head over to the Steelers practice facility. So Nate Jackson, nice enough from the Players Club to come in a little bit early before his show, hang out with me. We have been talking all week about this wristband stuff, and I get it. People are kind of tired of it. I think it's important merely from the standpoint that this offense has been so rough to watch this year that anything that could play a role in making it better, I think it's worth discussing. And after hearing Hackett and Justin Outen talk about the virtues of having it, okay, then clearly I heard two guys who believe in it, think that there's some value to it. Here's the good thing about it. And for those who are ready to flip the dial because, you know, they don't want to hear about it, here's the positive is that at this point, at 3-5, I'm still holding out hope for a 3 or 4 game winning streak to get back into playoff contention. Still holding out hope for that. But I'm doubtful it's going to happen. I don't think of this team as a playoff team. I don't expect the playoffs. But it can still be a successful season for me, even if they win 8 games, 9 games, maybe even if it's only 7, you might be able, as long as by the time this season is over, it is undeniable to all of us that, you know what, it looks like Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson are getting on the same page. And we're starting to see some results of that. And if that can be happening over the final 3-4 games of the season, Nate, I'm okay with that. And if this helps get to that, then I think this has been a good week.
Yeah, I think Nathaniel Hackett has been put in a really unusual position as a first-year head coach. He's coming in for a team who was last place in the division, had their coach fired because of they weren't a very good football team. And he takes over and assembles his coaching staff of all newbies as well, and it's a new ownership as well. But the quarterback that you bring in makes people think that you're going to go to the Super Bowl and that you are going to be on a playoff run when you have never done this before. You're implementing a new system. You got green coaches all on your staff. And to me, there is an expectation, or should be, amongst owners, that when you hire a new coach to change the culture, it might take a while to do that. I've been using this example to Chad in Orlando. They didn't really buy it. But Bill Walsh went 2-14 his first year. 6-10 his second year. It was the third year where he figured it out. 13-3, Super Bowl win, the dynasty begins. Kyle Shanahan had 2 losing seasons before he had a winning season, and he went 13-3 that third year. I just don't, like, patience is rewarded. I understand what you're saying, that you have to see positive signs that it's moving in the right direction. I see those. I see that the most recent game is an example of improvement. Now, are they going to build on that? Are they going to regress? Time will tell. We'll see on Sunday what the trajectory is looking like. But Nathaniel Hackett was brought here because he has a vision for a team that excited George Payton enough to hire him. So step back and let the dude work. Step back and let him figure out the things that aren't going well. He knows what's not going well. And I think some of the ruffled feathers you see at the press conferences and stuff is these guys know. These guys know how bad it looks. And then there we are poking at them. They get frustrated with it. They don't know how to deal with this attention. And it's a surprise to them, I think, that such rudimentary stuff is going wrong. But if you're moving in the right direction, I agree with you that I would feel good enough about it to bring him back. I think he needs to come back and create some continuity with Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson is such an enigmatic personality that anyone you bring in is going to have a hard time getting through to him. It's going to take time for anyone. So the same growing pains we have with trying to figure out Russell, the next guy's going to have too. So Nathaniel Hackett's already worked through the hardest parts of that. This wristband is one of those things. I have a theory on why Russell might not like the wristband. Russell Wilson likes to take a knee in front of his guys, look them in the eyes, and inspire them in the huddle. Tell them the play call. Look at me in the eyes. This is what we're going to do. Let's believe that this could be the home run. When you get the number on the thing, you're reading it. You're just looking down at the thing. You're not looking at your guys. You're reading the play call on one-on-one. Ready? Break. Are you inspired by that moment, Mike?
No.
You're not. When you see a teacher in front of the class, are you more engaged when they're looking at you teaching or when they're reading from a book?
When they're looking at me. Okay.
So maybe there's some of that with Russell. He wants to be engaged with the huddle. And
how much? They're averaging 15 points a game. How much inspiring is going on?
Well, this is who Russell is. This is what he believes. And when he first got here, what he said that sticks with me is that I want the guys to think in every huddle before every play that this play is going to be a home run. That's who Russell is.
But see, I think this is what the whole Russell story is. It's all about Russ wanting to get to a certain point, but maybe understanding that there are some steps that you just can't skip to get there, and that maybe he's starting to realize some of these things, and maybe it's as simple as simple. Maybe you're right. At some point, I want our offense to be to a point where I'm able to look Nate Jackson in the eye and say, this route's going to be for you. Right. I believe in you. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you can't get there right now. You can't get there because this offense is so bad. So if this is a way to make it easier to go out and get this offense going, okay, this is a step that you take now with the idea you eventually get to where you want to be and be the kind of quarterback. And again, for all the talk about what this week has been, I think it's – I choose to look at the positive. Believe it or not, I am taking the positive here, and the fact that he wore it last week, wore it again in practice this week, expected he'll wear it, is that he's understanding that the way we were doing things, the way that I wanted to do things, the whatever my vision was when I first came to Denver, it's not working out, and we got to be open to trying different things.
Yeah.
And the fact that it would appear that that's what he's open-minded about, then I think that's great. I think that's awesome. Now, do I wish that it didn't take this long and that the season wasn't hanging in the balance before you figure some of these things out? Sure.
But in the grand scheme, if in year three, they go 13-4.
Exactly.
Right?
Because if this is a 8 to 10 year thing with Russell Wilson that we're embarking on, this is going to be a blip. Exactly. We're going to look back on this and laugh at it. Exactly. Hey, remember the first half of his first season when we were talking about high knees and wristbands and guys eating hot dogs? Ha! Remember that? That was funny.
Right. And if Hackett's philosophy is true, is correct, then it is the back end of the season where they hit their stride, right? Yeah. That's why they didn't play anybody in the preseason.
Right.
Because they wanted to save them physically for the end of the season, which is looking weird now because they have so many guys injured. But at the same time, it's in front of us, and so it might be about to coalesce into something that we haven't seen around here before. But I will ask you, you said the offense is bad. It's bad, which it is, 15 points a game. What is bad about it? Why is it bad?
To me, it's bad because, well, first of all, the results. But I think when we were told about this kind of offense coming back, it's an offense that a lot of us grew up with, watching the Broncos play. And we had in our mind how it looked. And it's never looked like that.
That's not your Broncos offense.
That's not the Broncos offense that I grew up with, and it's not the Broncos offense that I was promised. It just doesn't, forget about the results for a second. It just doesn't even look like it.
Yeah.
And so when you take that and you're left wondering, okay, what are we doing here? What's the idea? What's this thing supposed to look like? And then add in the 3 and outs and the 15 points and all that. Now you're left wondering, geez, this thing is a mess.
Yeah.
And how deep is the hole to dig out of?
So when I hear Justin Allen and those guys talk about third downs, you know, and we got to be better on third down, and we got to call plays that, you know, on third down that are man and zone beaters, and conceptually, to me, the third down conversation is a symptom. It is not the disease. The disease is that your offense doesn't move the football. Whether it's first down, second down, or third down, the plays you call don't work. If there are plays you only call on third down, then that's a mistake right there, because teams watch film. Oh, there's your third down play. One of the 5 third down plays you run. So the play you run on third down should be the same play you run on first
down
and second down.
Yeah.
So if that play
doesn't...
Do you
think the Broncos have a clear third down package that teams can scout and say, oh, here comes a third... These are their third down plays.
I hope not, but it's possible.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Those plays have to be run on every down or else you become an easy tell.
Yeah.
So your plays aren't working. It's not that your third down isn't working. Your offense is not moving the football. Why? Because you just don't know each other. I don't know where you're going to be in that zone with this play or this look. You don't know where I'm going to throw it. We haven't spent enough time doing it. We don't practice full speed every day to find out where you're going to sit in those zones or how those zones unfold full speed. We can do mental reps. We can slow it down all we want, but nothing compares to full speed.
Can I ask you a question real quick? You were aware of this. You saw this coming to a certain extent. You were definitely trying to pump the brakes with all the unbridled optimism that was going on during the offseason, during training. I know it. You were trying to pump the brakes. You were right. But did you think it would be this bad?
No, I didn't. But I also, look, I'm not surprised because of the attention that was given to this one guy. It's not, you know, we've been building up this quarterback narrative so much. We need this guy, somebody. It's got to be either Aaron or Russell or somebody to come and save us. And with this mentality, you're causing an imbalance on your football team. These are other dudes in this locker room. Starting to hear grumbles about people being pissed at Aaron Rodgers. This is the back-to-back MVP. You know, they're not falling at his feet. They're not fanning him and feeding him grapes in the locker room. They think, screw this dude. He thinks he's better than us? I'm a rookie receiver. and I don't like this guy. If you're already pushing that divide, you need to bring the locker room together. He's your quarterback has to be one of the guys. He cannot be separate. He cannot be apart. He cannot be bigger than everyone is. Yes, I understand in the media, that's the story. He gets more money. He has more FaceTime. He ends up in the booth. He's the guy everyone uses to sell products. But in the locker room, he better be like everybody else or you don't stand a chance. And I think the thing we miss about Peyton Manning and Tom Brady is they get that part of it. They don't want special treatment in there with the dudes. They want to be one of the guys. They're sitting in, you know, in the cafeteria with the dudes. They have a lock. You know, they don't have a triple wide locker. They got a locker. Everyone's locker is the same size. You know what I'm saying? And so when you feed that beast, it's not surprising that it grows fangs and devours your team.
Coming up, fearless predictions for Sunday. That's next.
It's a Bud Light Football Friday. Bud Light, official beer sponsor of the Denver Broncos. Here's Schlereth and Evans.
Nate Jackson in for Stink, who had to leave a little early. He's covering Steelers-Saints this weekend, so we'll get to our fearless predictions. But before we do the actual prediction, how do you feel, what kind of momentum, do you believe in momentum, that the Broncos gained with that win over Jacksonville? I know that people cringe sometimes because I tend to call games must wins when technically they aren't a must win, that mathematically you're not eliminated if you lose this game. But I just think that you arrive at a certain point, there are these games that you just have to win. And if this team is going to have any chance of making a playoff run, I agree with Hackett. They have to be able to put together a 3 or 4 game winning streak. And for me, this is the perfect opportunity. You got to win in Jacksonville. You've had 2 weeks to just kind of feel good about that. There's something I would think about the bye that gives you a chance to do a clear reset, be refreshed mentally and physically. Let's go out. Let's really go after this. And so to pay all that off, you got to win this Sunday. You have to. And for all those reasons, this is a must win. Even if technically they lose it, they would still be alive. They got to win this game if they're going to have any chance of making a run at this thing.
Yeah, and I think the team would agree with you, Mike. I think they're coming off a bye. And we don't have a book on Nathaniel Hackett, but the old venerable coaches, we know how they do coming off byes. Andy Reid always pretty good off of a bye, right? Bill Belichick pretty good off of a bye because they can really dial up the game plan, really study their opponent, tend to their team's health and all that. So the Broncos are coming off a bye, and the Tennessee Titans are coming off a dogfight in which their defense was on the field for 91 plays. They had to go to overtime to in that game. They lost the game. They were on a 5-game winning streak prior to that. I think it was a very emotional game, a very physical game for them. So I think this presents an opportunity for the Broncos to go in there and find a way to get that win. We've been talking about, hey, next year, maybe in a couple years, they can figure this out. But there's a lot of guys in this locker room who don't have next year, right? And so you're absolutely right. You have to appeal to the guy's sense of urgency and the now and what are we going to do this week? How can we make a run? How can we make waves this year? The 49ers were 3-5 at one point last year. They made the playoffs. They almost made it to the Super Bowl. It happens every year. The Broncos can catch fire. Nobody in the NFL is that daunting these days, right? I mean, there's bad football being played. It's the under is hitting every week. Why is that? I know a lot of people have their views on it, but I think the Broncos have a good opportunity to go in and steal a victory. And I think that the victory that they had in London was a coming together for that team. They talked about it. You know, anytime you get out of town, you go on a trip together, like you go on a trip with your buddies after that trip, you're closer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have new inside jokes. Yeah. You have these experiences. You went and did something together.
Undeniably, yep.
And so I think these days that's hard to bring together that team building stuff naturally because of the way people live on their phones. You know, they don't hang out as much outside of the facility. And during COVID time, it was Zoom meetings and, you know, you had to eat your lunch in your car because people were worried about getting infected with COVID. Like, we're just now getting so we can be together again. This team is learning to love each other off the field and trust each other on the field. I think that trip helped a lot. Not only that, but it was a team win. the offense has been sucky, but they came through at the end of the game and picked up where the defense was slacking off. The defense gave up a lot of yards on the ground to Jacksonville. The offense stepped up and came through, so I think it was a type of team win that you can build on.
Time now for your injury report presented by Zoom Care. It's always one of the highlights of the Friday show. Let's get to it. Baron Browning did not practice yesterday along with KJ Hamler. They were both out, so their availability for Sunday we shall see. Troy Rank was on with us earlier. He already said Hamler's out. We'll see about Browning. But bunch of guys, let's get to it. Here we go. We'll start with Justin Simmons with a knee.
Limited.
Cameron Fleming with a quad.
Limited.
Tyree Cleveland trying to come back from that groin injury.
Limited.
Andrew Beck popped up on the injury report with one of those dreaded hamstrings.
Limited.
All right, so those guys are all limited. K'Wan Williams coming back from a wrist and elbow injury. He is?
Unlimited.
That's right. So there you go.
So, yeah, Broncos are pretty hurt, but, you know, the Titans have a longer injury.
Actually, they
report.
Do have a longer one.
Yeah, they're pretty banged up, and it's not a surprise after that game they had at Geha Stadium. You know it's called Geha? Arrowhead? They renamed it
Geha?
Geha.
Spell that.
G-E-H-A, all capitals. It's an acronym for, like, government health something. It's really boring, but they renamed it Geha. So I call it Geha Stadium now because it doesn't have the same mystique as Arrowhead. Although, you know, that was a dogfight for those guys. 91 plays on defense.
Yeah.
Was tough. So those guys are pretty beat up.
I'm here.
So both teams have these injuries to contend with. I think KJ Hamler's hurts a lot because he offers something that none of the other receivers
can. That's a bummer, too.
Yeah, exactly, for him. He's been through so much.
And this offense, I wanted to see more of him after what we saw at the end of that Jacksonville game.
Yeah, because he can take the top off, and Russell Wilson is the best deep ball thrower in the NFL.
Okay, you don't have to be sarcastic. That was your injury.
Government Employees Health Administration. That's what they named their stadium. Sellouts.
But you know what? It's Arrowhead.
I know.
It's
still Arrowhead.
It's just like it's Mile High.
Yeah.
I mean, really. How many?
Or is that Invesco?
That's right. Right. How many of you, I mean, really, how many of you out there, and you yourself, and how many of you have ever said, hey, I'll meet you at Empower Field at 1 p.m.? You know, come on.
Insert corporate logo here field.
Right.
Essentially.
Right.
You have to rack your brain to remember what company is on the wall there.
Your injury report presented by Zoom Care. Visit zoomcare.com to learn more about their Beyond Better Urgent and Primary Healthcare Clinics in Denver and Boulder today. It is time. Let's do it.
Prediction? Yes, prediction.
Hey, woman! Our Broncos pick presented by King Soopers, official grocer of the Denver Broncos. You are our gracious guest, so you go ahead.
Yep. I'll eliminate any suspense here. I think the Broncos are going to win.
All right.
I think the Broncos are going to win. The Titans offense is incredibly one-dimensional. Okay, it is about Derrick Henry.
Ryan Tannehill expected to be back.
Okay, but he hasn't had a ton of success this year. They're the very, very bottom in passing. They don't have a lot of receivers that they like. And so I expect them to be very one-dimensional. I expect Ejiro Evero and this defense to be up for the challenge of stopping Derrick Henry. Will they completely stop him? No, but I think they'll contain him enough to allow the defense to feed on whatever quarterback drops back there and tries to throw the ball. So I think that the Broncos are going to find a way to put some points up. They're going to score 21, and the Titans are only going to score 13.
21-13.
Yeah.
Okay. So I agree. I think 21 is kind of the magic number to get to now for this offense. I've put aside
your aspirations for 30 points.
My crazy folly dreams of youth about this being a 24, 25, 28 point per game offense. Those expectations and dreams have been shelved. So simply, if you can get to 21 plus, yeah, I think with this defense that is enough, and I'm going to buy in. Okay, Bronco fans, Broncos. You did enough in Jacksonville. Just like the bye week helps sort of reset everybody for the fans, I think it does for the players. I think it does the same thing for the fans and the followers of this team. I'm kind of reset. I'm refreshed. Let's go make this two in a row on our way to, because boy, it's The Raiders are a mess. They put Darren Waller and Hunter Renfro on IR.
Really? So
they come in here next week.
Both of those guys on
both
IR?
Both those guys are on IR.
You know, if the Broncos win the next two, they're at 5-5 there. That's looking pretty good.
Carolina. I watched Carolina last night. I mean, that is...
6-5.
6-5. There's no reason why you can't have a three-game winning streak.
And then you're in Cincinnati Bengals from last year territory, where you just got to go on a run, sneak in, and then you're in the big show.
And look,
in the dance.
You know how it is. You start putting together wins this time of year, momentum, confidence becomes a very powerful thing. But it has to happen Sunday.
It does.
Has to happen Sunday. You're not going to get any of this if you step back and give it all away, the momentum of the last couple weeks. So I'll go with the Broncos as well. A little less scoring. I'll go 19-14.
Nice.
All right, 19-14.
Go Broncos.
Go Broncos. Let's ride. Our Broncos pick, presented by King Soopers, official grocer of the Denver Broncos. I know Orlando's here. I just saw Chad Brown. We got a full Players Club. Nate, thank you so much for sitting in. I really appreciate it, my man. Players Club, coming your way next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.